I think, or the main, you know, your best award-winning work tended to still come on Harvey Nichols. So what about Pants, Stretch and Calendar then? How do they all happen?
The first thing we worked on with Harvey Nichols that we properly got briefed on was the one that ended up being Pants. We got it because it seemed not like a very good brief, actually. And people didn't really know what to do with it, because at the time, it was still in that world of another Harvey Nichols fashion victim.
Right.
And so it literally was doing the most simple visual pun that we could. So it was like, it's opening in Edinburgh, Scottishmen don't wear pants. And there was that trend at the time for like blokes wearing, you know, as you can see, their Calvin Kleins. And literally, so we just joined those two things together. And I can remember we presented it to Mark Reddy, and I just thought, he will not like this kind of thing. I don't know why. I don't know why I think that. But it was just too kind of childish in a way. But he did. He really, really loved it. And then when we made it, we had no budget. And we, again, classic SMI thing, is we picked a photographer who had this very vivid book. Because we thought, well, that would make the tartan look really fantastic. But he'd done one of those things that you could do then, which is he had an RGB printer and it turned everything up to like 1000%, so all the colours are really pinging. And then when we shot it, and you have to print it on normal CMYK, they don't look like that, they just look really horrible and flat. And so Justin had gone on holidays, had to retouch with this amazing guy, Steve, the whole of the kilt again and do all the colours individually. And when you look at it, you think, but it just looks like a snapshot. And it's like, yeah, it took ages to make it look like a snapshot, which is so stupid. But again, one of those things that I'll make no secret of the fact that from being at Goldsmiths, me and Justin used to look at D&AD books in the library. Having a pencil was our be-all and end-all. And when we put stuff in for awards, I think we put in it might have been the Beatle work at the same time, I can't remember. But literally, we chucked that into art direction as a total afterthought, a real, just chuck it in there. Because honestly, it's just a snapshot. And it was, apparently it was Alex Taylor who made a big stand for it, and I think she's having sat opposite her at MC Saatchi for a while. I can see why most people wouldn't have wanted to go into battle against her. And it's because, I'm sure it's because of her, it won. And I remember winning, going to the NAD and literally thinking we've got no chance. And when it won, and it was so badly announced, that guy, Richard Wilson,
yeah.
I don't know if you went.
Yeah, I did go that year.
He was terrible. And it was like someone had invited a slightly pissed old man to do. And so we didn't have any of that tension thing. He said, and the nomination and the winner is, and that was it. There was no, like, he just said, oh, the nomination and the winner is, and that was it. And I have to say, you know, one of those things where, because you've set it up so high, it never ever felt as good as that. It never did. After none of the other things, after them, felt quite as amazing as that. But what we sort of tried to do was, without sounding pretentious, I think advertising. I've only ever met one person I think who's like an innate talent, like someone who it's like they've got this thing within them that makes them really brilliant at advertising. I think for the rest of us, you just learn to be good. And what we'd started to do is we'd noticed that in Cannes, which had become quite big, is everything was very visual. That there weren't big headline-driven campaigns at the time. Everything was visual. And I think from around that time, we started to do everything as literally a simple visual, or as somebody put it quite well, a VCM, a visual coincidence malarkey. A VCM. And if you look at work to me, Justin, so much of it is that. But so we started just to strip it just down to really simple visual and a logo with a small line, and that, and it wasn't because we had some insight. It's basically because, and so the next thing we did was that stretch, I think decent thing we did was that stretch campaign for Harvey Nichols for the sale.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, that was quite interesting. Justin had been away on some sort of management, he thinks. He was head of art. And I'd done loads of layouts of different ads. So I'd drawn, not as well as he would have, stretched clothes, exactly like you see. So I'd drawn it with little hands. Not little hands, because that sounds like some children would do it.
And Donald Trump did.
Right in the head. And then he came and he just went, why don't we do this? And he just drew a box around the hands. And that is, I think, how teams work best. It's like, this is pretty good. And then someone goes, why don't we do this? And it's like, that's... And I remember both of us saying, fuck me, that is good. And you know when you just know that, that something is good. And again, we got Mark Reddy, got... we used, I can't remember the photographer, and I shouldn't probably remember the name, because it was one of those shoots where we did everything in camera, and I definitely think it's the most boring shoot I've ever done to this day, of literally stretching clothes out without using any retouch. I don't know why he wanted to do that in the chin in to create a line. It was unfreaking believable when I look back at it now. It should have been like a two-day shoot. Some retouch of it. I think it was by the end of it, sort of sawing your own head off. But that was a good one. I enjoyed doing that. That did well at awards, and that was it was quite a big thing for us. I think it was we got sent on going around to pick up awards at the different shows, and it came out at the same time as Cops. You know. Nick and Simon and Fergland Islands ad. So I remember going to New York with them on an incredibly messy trip to the one show. So it was great fun. It all felt very sort of show busy, really. I think it's a funny thing, that stretch thing. I was doing my website the other day. I looked and sort of, yeah, it's one of my complete things I think I've sort of been involved with. And then the other Harvey Nichols thing that you mentioned, that was a kind of interesting time for me and Justin as well, is we'd done so many things that were like literally one visual.
Yeah.
And then when we did that calendar thing, we'd actually done all of them as one single visual. So it was somebody sitting on the loo, a girl sitting on the loo, and you could only see her legs, but you could see she had really, really nice trousers on. And she was, I don't know, using toilet paper made of newspaper. It was something nice. It was a real glamour image, a glamorous setup, but was quite grubby, like using newspapers, toilet paper. And we'd done all of them like that. And then just decided that let's just try something else. And Jeremy was always a big fan of a multiple image, as his fantastic Budweiser ad, you know, the labels.
Yeah.
And so we turned it into the calendar thing. And it was because the planner... And you mentioned a planner in a very positive light here. She said, I'm a total fashionista. So what I do is and literally this is what she said, I buy a really beautiful pair of shoes and the rest of the month I'll just eat baked beans. And it was like
there
that.
There you go.
It's like, thank you. And then we wrote three quite easily. And then we really struggled with the jigsaw one. But it's the same for the fun fur thing. The planner actually said, oh, it's one of those cars that's kind of fun on the outside, but quite serious underneath. You think, thank you. maybe they don't get as much credit as they deserve, but and then that was just a sort of a bit of a labour of love, particularly for Justin, who made sure that every single shot, James Day shot it for us, and that every single shot, all those baked beans, they're all different, and it's not retouching. Yeah. I think by the end of
at the time, I think we sort of both knew that it'd probably be the last thing we did together, and so it.
And why did you think that? Was it because you'd come to a certain?
I think the business. Partly, I'm going to blame the business, but I think when you're sort of the better you do as a team, and you all know this as well. You sort of get pushed up, and you become like a creative director. Or at the time, they had. It was a group head system. There wasn't a creative director. There was Jeremy and there was group heads. And so you start judging work. And then Justin was also had become head of art. And you get pressures put on you in different places. It's a bit like that book, The Dirt, about Motley Crue, where everyone's telling you different things, that like, you should do this and you should do this. It puts pressure on the team. And I think agencies, I'm not saying this about DDB at all, but I think a lot of agencies, they like splitting teams up.
Right.
Because a team can have a lot of power.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
I think Widens is the only agency group that have always have two creatives and one other person. They don't do one creative director and an account person. And it's to make sure that the business is creatively led. And I think it's that thing, when you start creative directing, everything changes. If you're different as people, when you work together as a team, it's all about the work. So, yeah, I think when you work as a team,
yeah,
you can focus on the work to the end of time. I mean, yeah, God almighty, me and Justin spent a lot of time noodling things, and me and you have. But when you are creative directors or looking after things, it becomes very, the differences in people become, because you're not talking about work, it's now how you are with people or how you want to be perceived or how you want to run something. And they can be completely different. Paul Burke wrote a really good piece about this, but it says it's about some people like doing the work, like being involved with the work. Me, that's definitely me. Or like being involved in the managerial and being on that side of the work, and that's what Justin was like. He's like, and there's nothing wrong with that on either count. But I think that when we did calendar, I think we were at that point where something was going to change. It felt like it was going to change, I think. And so it was around that time that Hammersley, who'd been the chairman, we'd all already talked about the fact that he was doing that because that he was in talks with them, and then he went to join them. In the meantime, I'd been approached by Fallon, which was kind of had turned from being like what we used to call BNP Light into like a pretty big swinging dick of an agency. I mean, it was doing, you know, and obviously Juan had gone there and they were really starting to, they'd gone from being an agency that were doing quite BNP-ish work to being, you know, it's really having its own identity. And so they contacted me about joining. And then I was actually persuaded by the headhunter, who could have made a lot of money out of this, but didn't. He said, no, why don't you stay and become the creative director of B, which is what Steve had spoken to me about. And so that's what I did. I stayed. And so I was then, so Jeremy was the UCD, I was the creative director, and then we had sort of this group head system. So it's a pretty brilliant job, it's a brilliant position to be in. And it was at the point where we were just getting going with the FT pitch. And so, yeah, it was amazing. So I did that, yeah, I did that for a year. It was quite stressful at first. I mean, it really is, because you have no one to bounce what you're thinking off. So it might be something completely banal, or it could be, you know, significant. It could be something about work, it could be a way of handling something. But when you don't have the other person to bounce that off or just to ask, it's really difficult, because people think that you should have all the answers, but obviously that's nonsense, and I know that now. But at first you're like, and I've seen a lot of people who've sort of gone solo, you know, quite recently at Leo Burnett, and you can see the struggle, and you can see it's like the fear in their eyes, because it's hard. And again, I'll sort of reiterate, I think for some agencies, I think it dissipates that power of a creative team so much, is why I was, if anyone ever says, I'm thinking about splitting up with a partner, I said, don't split up with your partner if you still want to be making work, because you've become a brand and you have power. When you're an individual, you do, but it takes a while to get that back. It's not the same. I don't think it's ever the same. I really don't. I think, you know, Tony and Kim or Tony and Ian Tate are powerful, much more so if it was one of them on the record. But yeah, I've mentioned this in my email, but, you know, we've all got a big mistake in us, and my God, mine was going to Fallon. Wow, that was a total disaster.
Why is that?
It really was. I think I can remember resigning to Jeremy, and Jeremy saying, kind of what I've heard about it, Adam, I'm not sure it's quite for you. And I was, you know, you're so, you know, I'm sure it was just pure arrogance, really. Like, I'm just thinking, no, I think I'll be fine. I really think I'll get a shot. Because obviously, you know, it was just done Guerrilla. I mean, it was flying, it was the place to be. And I went there, and it wasn't even by the end of the first week, and I knew I'd made a massive mistake. But I was just too proud to go back to Jeremy, cap in hand. I'd also had a spectacular leaving deal and felt really much. wrong to sort of then go back and turn out. Anyway, it just wasn't really a role for me there. I just didn't get it. No, I just didn't understand how the place worked. I didn't fit in. It was just a terror. I hated it. And after about 7.5 months, I went out for a cup of tea with the ECD, and we sort of negotiated my own, what turned it from a cup of tea and a piece of cake into negotiating my own leaving. And then, which I was, I think I was so livid. I think it took years to get over my rage. I don't quite know who, partly myself, for being so bloody stupid. But anyway, then this is where the freelance world kicks in, because just after my conversation outside the tea shop, just at the back of Broadwick Street, I went to Cannes with all the sort of DDBers that I was mates with, and I got back and I was like, Christ, I now have to freelance, I don't know what to do. And I can remember, you know, that sort of jaggedy feeling you used to get after Cannes, where you're literally made of booze.
Yeah.
You know, and there's, you know, you sort of tip, and I just tip my clothes out onto the floor, you know, things you've been wearing for like 48 hours. And I was just standing in my underpants and that awful, and then the phone goes, and I picked it up and said, "Hello, Adam, it's Paul," and it was Paul Silburn. And I was so sort of taken aback that I went, "Hello, Paul, I'm in my pants." That kind of weird way your brain works. But, you know, like, so super hungover that you actually think you might have got flu or something. And then he said, "Oh, you know, I heard you were at Loose End. Do you want to come to Saatchi's and work on Diesel Pitch?" And that was it. And that's how I got going to freelance. And honestly, I could have, if he'd been there, he wouldn't have wanted to hug me, but I would have hugged him on the spot. Because it was just brilliant, because it literally, it just took any, I don't know what to do next. I feel like a kind of, you know, I've sort of really shot my career in the foot. But I think in the long term is that, you know, you never do. I think as long as you haven't been a total arsehole on the way up, someone will always catch you on the way down. And it was great. And I went there and, you know, popped in Jexy, who had all just started, I think, and it was a really good vibe. And it was, yeah, it had started, and it was just really, really, really good fun. And then from there, I then went to Wydens and did 4 or 5 months there, working with a guy called Chris Groom, a talented creative. We did Impossible Dream, etc., and that's freelance. And then I freelanced for about a year, and I it kind of really got my kind of confidence back, I think. You're working for great things. I'm working on Honda at, Wydens. I mean, it's not too shabby. It worked out weirdly. Ended up working on The Guardian a bit there as well, which had gone there after leaving DDB. I think it just sort of opened up slightly a different world and a different way of working as well. And I think the perception, so we never really had freelancers at DDB, but people always go, "Oh, you just get all the old crappy stuff," or you get the stuff that, well, you do tend to sometimes get the stuff that no one else can do. That is true. But, you know, you just get treated really bad. And you just also, it's not true. I mean, I actually think it's the opposite. I think people are incredibly nice to you. There's absolutely no politics involved at all. Because they know they're paying for you, you get quite concise briefings. You get told exactly what is expected of you, which was a bit of a relief after the months I'd had before. And it, to an extent, has been a bit like a drug to me, freelancing, is because once you've experienced it and you go around from different places doing different projects, it's quite hard to go back and just do one thing again. I mean, afterwards, obviously, I freelanced for a while, and then I saw John O'Keefe, and then I went to BBH, and I was going to freelance, but because there was that word again, recession, another one.
Yes.
And I was like, I don't want to worry about my income. I'll go to BBH, and it's that other thing. It always looks good on your CV. And I went, and then I did a couple of years there, but that was full time, and that was okay. I mean, it was all right. It was going through a bit of a sort of crisis of confidence at the time, because John O'Keefe had just left.
Oh yeah.
And I think he'd been like the gatekeeper of the departments, as everyone said. And I think as soon as he left, there were other factions there who had saw this opportunity to shape it in a slightly different way. And it was, and I really, really did think, oh, well, this is going to be great. I know what it's about. And it went through this quite a sort of strange period, which were completely different, I think, to what I expected it to be. I really thought it would be very old school. But it went, like I think a lot of agencies, it probably still exists, but Hyper Island and things like that. Well, it's just that crazy Swedish sort of creativity where some sort of nine-year-old would turn up with a beard and go, unstick the... And everyone just sitting there with... when I think about it now, they have really brilliant creatives and, really senior people, and they're writing. Think of the first thing you think of, and write it on the pad, and you write it on the notepad, the post-it note, stick it on the wall. So by the end of like half an hour, there'll be 1,000 bits of post-it note saying, potato, cucumber, Bernard Hill, the young ones. And you think, how is that helping? What is that achieving? But everyone was so into it, and to bad mouth it was a real no-no. So it was sort of quite a strange thing. And then they decided they wanted creative directors to look after, focus on one piece of business only, and that's just not me. So once again, Paul Silvan came to the rescue, and again, I went back to Saatchi's to freelance. There was mother along the way, if I remember rightly. But yeah, what BVH needed was what he ended up doing. He just did some really great work. I mean, but they shouldn't have hired me. They should have got David Cobots in 2 years earlier, because he did a bloody brilliant job, and clearly an extremely talented creative, and just what they needed. But so I went back to freelancing, and then I think on day one at Saatchi's, I bumped into you.
Yeah.
Table. So we worked on the same thing, didn't we?
Yeah,
he got us in, and he said, "Oh, I think you know Ben. I think you know Ben. Anyway, get going." And it was like, "Oh, all right then. I'm glad we get on."
Absolutely. Yeah, it was really interesting that year. I really enjoyed the freelancing, and I think about the different kind of stages and phases that we had, because we did that long chunk at Saatchi's, which was really enjoyable as well, and working into Paul and Kate. And John Pallant as well at some point as well was really interesting.
Yeah.
And then I think that was the next place, Dentsu, where we went. And that was
Saatchi's, remember the Lagos trip? I've still got pictures now. Well, when you think about it as a freelancer, what a great gig.
Yeah.
For people who aren't me and Ben, we got sent to Lagos to work on Guinness Africa. And the brief was to go and enjoy going out and drinking Guinness in Lagos, meeting local people, and literally no work was required. It was just to go out and have a really, really good time. And yeah. We went out business class, and we were lying down on the way out, and lying down on the way back. And you think, with those two guys, really top guys, it was absolutely brilliant.
Absolutely.
What a job that was. It was Dentsu again. That was this time of the year. It was Christmas, I remember.
I remember as well. I think we had an interesting Christmas party that I don't think we should go into the details of no. too much, really. No. And then we went to JWT after that and worked for Russell. And there was like Hugh and Adam were there and Axel Childicott. That was really interesting as well.
Yeah, I must admit, I remember getting quite starstruck meeting Axel Childicott. I'd always been one of my heroes, and it was one of... there's this cliche, I haven't met many of my heroes where they always disappoint, but he really didn't. Do you remember? He was a really, really top bloke, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was fantastic. That trip to Lagos...
Super, super smart as well.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I was just going to go back to that trip to Lagos. I think the way I remember it being said was not only you're going to go and immerse yourselves in the drinking culture of Nigeria, which I thought was a great... idea, a great trip to go on. But I remember we went to Saatchi's for a couple of days beforehand to just kind of, I think bed down a little bit and find out what the brief was and get our jabs and things. Everyone else around the office, like Lawrence and Mark and people like that, were like, like we were going off to die or something, go off to war. I can't believe you're doing this. And you and I were like, this is brilliant. Someone's sending us to Lagos? Fantastic. And everyone else was like, oh my God, I can't believe you actually want to. But it was great, yeah.
Yeah, I remember quite something specifically about the hotel. It's finding out how much it was a night and being really shocked. It's like 280 quid a night, and it wasn't particularly nice. And saying to somebody, one of our fixers, saying, God, it's really expensive. He said, it is expensive because there's the only hotel that guarantees no prostitutes and no guns. That's it.
Which was quite disappointing when I heard that.
yeah, well... maybe both, probably one.
Yeah,
and it was that thing. Apparently, all the other hotels are just rifled a bit. Just think, there was some armed guards outside. But it never felt like. I mean, we had an armed escort, which is a bit ridiculous. But yeah, that was a brilliant job. But yeah, we went to Dentsu, and that was going through some strangeness at the
very
time.
Very odd. Yeah, Dentsu at that time. I don't know if you recall, but it had. Like Andy Lockley, I think, was sort of pushed out as CD. And then they had a couple of people who were sort of more in the account management side of things, basically running the whole thing with no CD at all, which was a bit odd.
Yeah, and at one point, I think everyone other than those two people were freelancers.
Yeah, it was
a really, I mean, it was no big surprise when it got merged or became Mullen Lowe. McGarry Bowen,
yeah. And JWT was cool as well. I mean, it was interesting to go and spend a bit of time there and work into Russell and that kind of thing. But they were enormously international, all their clients, and it was all these giant jobs that were, I think it was like 80% of their stuff went out in other countries for other big sort of international clients.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that, it wasn't, you know, it was all right. I kind of enjoyed it there, but I think it was going through its own little period of transition as well.
Yeah, and I think, and again, it's a thing that you learn when you're freelance, is how different some agencies are. Because, like I said, at JWT, you felt like you could come back in a year and those jobs would still be live.
Yeah.
But you go to a small place, is, you know, when we were running Canon at Dentsu, and we were making work. And when we left, a lot of the work got made. And, you know, you realize that was sort of smaller and agile. And I guess it depends on the kind of. I always thought that agencies were much of a muchness, but I certainly. I remember when I was at Wydens, I mean, that was the most insane agency in terms of its busyness, and it just seemed like total chaos. But in the chaos, it kind of made sense that you, again, you sort of, that had a bit of a sink or swim culture, but you know, they're not all the same. Because afterwards, you went to Channel 4.
Which, yeah, I did.
And then I went to M&C, which actually ended up staying there because I'd been there before with Graham Fink, and he got me back. And you went to work with Tom Tabb, didn't you?
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, Four Creative.
And then I went to, because Graham Fink was leaving, he said, you come in because you know the place, when I worked with Mark during this transitional period, and I worked with Mark Goodwin, and I worked there. And I really, really enjoyed it. And actually, they approached me for a job. They asked me if I'd stay, but it was exactly the same time that Justin said, do you want to come to Leah Burnett? And I sort of thought, you know what? This would be interesting. Let me do that. And it was the work on McDonald's, which, you know, having left BBH, when asked to just look after Barclaycard, and I was thinking, I don't want to do one client. You know, 4 years later, just under 2 years later, I went to do a client which I would never have envisaged myself looking after at all, but actually did it for 5 years and did rather enjoy it, I must admit. But again, it's a very different thing. I was a thing with McDonald's, which I'm going to say now that I don't work on it, but it gets to get quite tiring. Just, actually, as a brand, I'm not going to defend the brand and why I work on it. I think they do. I always find it weird that people, it's very much of our industry, get really on its back compared to like KFC or the other, you know, Pret a Manger, whatever. But you always start about 10 yards behind.
Yeah.
And it's that phrase that whatever you do, you know that it's always, yeah, that's great. That's really, really great. Comma, from McDonald's and that. Every single thing you ever do, it always has that. That's, yeah, it's brilliant, you know, for McDonald's. And you always felt like you could, it's not so much a logo thing, but it's a perception thing that it never, as a brand, I think a lot of really, really good work was made on the Blow Me Out Trumpet. I think I am part of Blow Me Out Trumpet, like, but it never quite gets to the giddy heights because it's McDonald's and no one wants to vote for it in the awards juries.
Yeah,
and funny. I think partly, it also suffered from the fact that because it's a very large company with a lot of vested interests there, you know, they don't research anything or anything, but they don't, it's very hard to get a sort of 8 or 9 out of 10. It's a struggle to get a 7. And so when you're making 30 or 40 bits of work a year of TV ads, you're just trying to net out about 6.5. You don't want any stinkers, but it's really hard to get right up there. And you realise that when you're spread across so many different jobs, you really need, you need to Everyone needs to be in the same, wanting the same thing, and not everybody is because they don't need to. The business is always doing well. It's had like 49 months of consecutive growth. You haven't got a battle. But Harvey Nichols had a battle. They wanted to become famous through their advertising. Yeah. It had become an invisible brand. When you've got that, it's much more fun and interesting to work on than when you're sort of maintaining something, just keeping it nice, you know.
Absolutely. So now are you freelancing again? Is that where you're at?
Yeah, I resigned on exactly my fifth anniversary, the 12th of September, not that I'm remembering or anything. Worked for 3 months' notice, which I have to say, work out your notice. I did do that at BBH, and I actually went 1 month over that one to line something up, but it's hard doing your notice. And yeah, I just finished last Monday. I've done a couple of jobs already, small things, but I'm trying not just work for companies, but my first job working for production companies, two different ones.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to not just do the advertising, but working a bit direct for clients. So I had a guy who's a client now, came around today, in fact this very afternoon. I've been working on, he's launching a new business, so doing all his website is right, you know, basically the background, what the brand is about, all those sort of things that you kind of need as assets. So some would go to the public, some go to, you know, the your backers, so things like that. So just different kinds of writing. I mean, I'm not dumping off the advertising by any means, but I just, you know, as everybody knows, you listen to this, the business is getting smaller and smaller. I think you've got to steal a march, particularly I'm 50 years old now. And I looked around Leo Burnett when I started 5 years ago, and there was quite a few people who were 50. And when I left, there was one person older than me. And the water just somehow, it doesn't come down, you go up to it. But it's not a business that employs a lot of older creatives. And I think you've got to think smart about getting there and getting work and what kind of work you want to do. For me, it's just getting back. So I really love writing. I'm never going to be a guy who's going to run a global piece of business like Neil, who you've just had on. That's not me. He's really well suited for that. His personality is suited. He's good at that. I would be bloody terrible at that job. Partly because I just don't want to fly around the world on a plane. But I'm just not. It's you have to sort of know what you're about. And so that's really why I didn't just want to sort of pull down a salary at Leo Burnett. I just felt like if you haven't got passion for doing that, keep doing that job. You shouldn't be doing it because it kind of has a knock-on effect for the people coming through. And 5 years on McDonald's was enough. I really love working for Brandon. I'm incredibly proud to work on Brandon. Would I work on it again? Yes. But it was five very hard retail years. And so, yeah, I was quite relieved that I got two jobs that actually advertising my services, which had come from conversations I've had early in the year with people. But, you know, there's companies that, you know, a lot of clients are going direct to people. They're going direct to production companies. They're going direct to creatives. That's happening a hell of a lot more. And as agency groups, like I work for the Publicist Group, and there's a point at which the only way they're going to make money for shareholders, there's less and less clients around spending money. You know, and yet when I started out, I'm sure when you were at AMB, you probably had a couple of beer accounts. BNP had a couple of beer accounts. Down the road had a beer account. But now they're all owned by, is it InBev or one of those?
Yeah, one of those.
Unless you've got InBev, you haven't got any of them. You know, and the same with, you know, there used to be lots of, you know, maybe there's some small software companies. Now it's just Microsoft. So there's less and less money going around. But the only reason where you can make money, your shareholders, is you've got to get rid of people. And so it used to be the bottom. They all got made redundant. Every year there'd be like it never even gets announced now. And I'm not, this isn't a publicist thing, it's just an across the board thing. And then the squeeze gets into the middle, but clients still want loads of work. They want yards and yards and yards of work. Yeah. Someone, as the writer, you can't just beast lots of young people to work through the night every night, although that does happen a lot. And the freelance business in the UK is strong, and I know quite a few freelancers now because they're all people who used to be in the books when I, you know, when I was looking at putting in. There's a lot of those really good people. They're out there working now, you know, but they're just not working in the agencies.
Yeah, I had a bit of a love-hate relationship with freelancing in that all the positive things you've just said, I totally agree with and thought it was fantastic to see different agencies, to work for different people, to work on different clients. And I got a huge amount of experience in those 3 years that I wouldn't have had if I just stayed at AMV or whatever, which I've been doing for a long time. The thing that annoyed me about it, and I don't know if you think the same thing, is the fact that you're kind of trying to get your next job, trying to do your current job, and like chasing up payment from really fucking annoying rich companies that go, oh yeah, yeah, we'll pay you, whatever. So I just found that a little bit of a grind, but I think it's a matter of pros and cons. And I think there are enough pros that balance out the cons in freelancing, and it can be a really fantastic way of going about things.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of probably wiped my mind. I was, the payment thing, I never really had a problem. There's only one that,
I think it was JWT. No, maybe it was Search. Someone was just annoying about it. But also, I found the smaller the company, the
was not great.
Who was?
But that, you know, Mother weren't great. But that was a while back. But I think I mean, I'm not sure. I've completely got my head around the fact that it's that the thing of finding the next one, the next one. But I think I found it very frustrating as our business changed. You know, going back to the sort of days of DDB, etc., where you would do good work and the work would get, well, you did work that was on brief, so I was saying good work, like it was like, but you do, you know, you were there to do a job, and you kind of know whether someone's good and when it's bad. Okay, and it wouldn't, you know, it would get bored, and you'd just be arguing over the details, really, getting really cross about the details, which was really funny. But as the business has changed, and I remember Larry Bark having the temerity to suggest we might present more than one route on something, and literally people almost down tools. And presenting two routes was just laughable. I mean, it would go to like a pantechnicon full of ideas and take it down to the client and say, which one do you want? And as you see those things happen, those frustrations, I think I can tap into, because it's happened to me more recently. I sort of feel that the other side of freelancers sort of gets over that. Maybe I'm being a bit, altruistic about the whole thing, and being like, oh, it's all wonderful, wonderful. But I think there is a lot of good sides to it, and they both come with their frustration. I do think it will balance out. I mean, the first things I've been doing I've really, really enjoyed, because they don't come with any baggage, and I think that's the thing, that it doesn't come with any politics or any behind-the-scenes machinations. It's literally, can you do this as well as you can? And then you do, and it seems to be quite rewarding. And both the things I do, both of them are being made, so that's nice. So, you know, that isn't going to happen all the time, obviously. But that part of it sort of overcomes it. Yeah, the money thing was never so much fun. The finding the next job is a thing that I don't think I'll ever quite come to grips with. But, you know, me and you stayed in continual employment, didn't we?
We did, and I think that was really good. And I think the other positive thing that you were just touching on is the fact that when you get to somewhere new, people tend to just be on their, not on their best behavior, but it's the flip side of the no baggage thing. People, when you meet someone for the first time, they tend to want to leave a good impression. So you meet people in a sort of more of a short-term way, and everyone's really nice. So, you know, you don't get bogged down in the negativity that some people have if you're there a long time, or if there is politics and baggage. So that is a really good aspect of it, I think.
No, the only thing was quite interesting, because I've been doing my website today and yesterday and the day before. It's quite interesting to see how work has changed and how much softer everything is now. It's like you could do quite sort of crunchy ads in the not too distant past. And I do sort of miss that. You see something, you might see a billboard or just anything. I don't know. I mean, ever so, I'll. But are you just picking traditional things? Now I'm just picking things that I might actually see.
Yeah.
Or, you know, some really niche thing. You know, like when you get to awards do and no one has seen anything other than the awards do. It's a bit like that. But work just can be a bit more punchy. I think everything is very soft at the moment. And I kind of miss that. I miss the sort of a bit of edge to things. I think that would be my, you know, I look at work that I've been involved with in the past. It's sort of more recently, it's much softer. You know, some nice stuff that we did at Leah Burnett. There was that Skip ad that we worked on. And that's pretty good, but it's all quite soft and it's all quite gentle. It's all, you don't get, and I wonder how we got into a place where
everything has that kind of...
Yeah, no, but what, you know, what I mean is that everything's really nice and everything's really lovely, and you don't get, like, kind of edgy, slightly darker advertising, funny, like, darker.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I sort of miss that, but...
Yeah, fair enough. I don't know what the cause is. I think you should go and blame Emma for that, really. But it's certainly something that...
Yeah, it's not because of the John Lewis thing. You might not actually put any of this on your thing. I don't mean it's a bad thing, but you know, like, everything is really, really nice. But it's happened a bit at Fallon, you know, like a train would arrive, lovely balloons come out, and everyone's isn't it lovely? Here's some foams come out. Isn't it lovely? You just don't get that. I remember at DNA Doom when they put... Axel Childicott and Steve Henry's reel up, and it was embarrassing.
Yeah,
because it was so bloody good, the pot noodles, and it just looked like we had just become the biggest load of lily-livered people. And you know, that it just really edgy and funny and memorable. And then all the other ads preceding in that evening had all just been really like gentle. Here's a bit of a mood film. Here's a lovely thing about something lovely. Here's a lovely voiceover about something lovely. And I think that's a shame. I don't think there's as many tones of voice as perhaps there used to be. You could do something lovely, or you could do something edgy. You could do it at the same agency, and A and B did.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, they were doing something really sweet, like, you know, Yellow Pages, and at the same time they were doing Volvo ads and with Tom and Walt, same agency.
Yeah.
You know, everything's just slightly.
Okay, well, I think that's most things, and I enormously need a wee now, so that would be a good time to possibly call it.
Please don't edit this out. From the position you're at, you could actually be having a wee now.
Maybe I am. You'll never know.
No.
I'm not.
I'm sitting with a peace pot.
Maybe.
And your service is actually enabling that.
That could well be the case, and I don't want to tell you the truth because I think your speculation is much more interesting than what's actually going on with my bladder.
Right, you're going to have your wee.
Okay. Huge thanks. Okay. And
I just say
so much Christmas.